All right, so welcome back to another Co-op the Cast.
Now this is my kind of party. Grab a friend, bring the guns. It's time for the Co-op the Cast.
This is Co-op the Cast, episode number 53, for Monday, October the 18th, 2010. It is Nick and Mike, and hopefully this will be a little bit more of a normal episode.
Hopefully, because last week's was... Yeah. Well, the less said about it, the better.
But it might be a little more normal, but it's going to be a lot more special, and that's because a little later on we're going to be joined by Andy Schatz of Pocket Watch Games, who's making Monaco, What's Yours is Mine. You might have seen it covered on our site. It's a little indie game. We're gonna get our first chance. You know, it's actually, I think, our first developer interview in the 2 years we've had the podcast. I don't know what's taken us so long.
We've been blindsided by internet celebrities like Phil Kohler.
Yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, we hope to have more in our third year of the Co-op the Cast here. Hope to have some more developer interviews and stuff like that. But let's jump into the what you've been playing section. And Mike, what have you been playing?
Well, in between long ass drives that I had a short-term habit of taking the past 2 weekends, I've been playing a lot of Castlevania Lords of Shadow, and I really enjoy it. It's one of those things where you see a lot of people say, oh, this is a God of War ripoff, and it's not Castlevania. And everyone's definition of what Castlevania is a Symphony of the Night type game. And yeah, I mean, you're using, you know, a whip ranged weapon, which feels vaguely analogous to Kratos's Blades of Chaos. But, you know, there was a third person. There were a couple third person Castlevanias that used the whip well before God of War came out. So you can call it a God of War ripoff if you like, but you know, it feels loosely like a Castlevania game. Like, it's different enough that you kind of have to hunt for it, but there are some pretty fun things. Like, you know, I'd say I'm roughly halfway through the game right now, and it's taken a distinct turn towards, you know, doomy, gloomy, gothic castles full of things that you whip and items that spring out of them. So it feels good, but you know, I really dig the game. It kind of wears its influences on its sleeve, and it basically rips off two bosses from Shadow of the Colossus so far, and I don't know if there's any more like it coming, but it's fun. I dig it, and I think your prejudice, if you're a Castlevania fan, you should set it aside and just try it out and, you know, critique it on its own merits, because it is a pretty good game. Also played a bunch of Borderlands for the co-op night. Got some games in and drove around and realized that the General Knox stuff was still way detuned for my character level, so I'd move like 5 feet forward and get, you know, pelted in one hit by a rocket trooper or whatever. So went back into the old world and, you know, moved, you know, closer in my second playthrough to finishing it again. And I just picked up Fallout New Vegas today, and haven't played it enough to really form an opinion, but it's more Fallout. It definitely feels exactly like Fallout 3. So if you liked Fallout 3, you'll probably like it, though I hear it's pretty buggy. So
that's not surprising.
It's not surprising. It is an Obsidian game, and those guys have released a bunch of great games, and none of them were stable. Even dating back to the original Fallouts, I remember Fallout 2 was notorious for not working.
Yeah.
So it's just par for the course. You gotta realize that when Obsidian makes a game, there'll be some things that are absolutely amazing about it, and it'll probably destroy whatever piece of hardware you're trying to play it on. You know, not trying to knock Obsidian, that's just, you know, how things tend to go. And when I was up at your place, we played a bunch of NHL 11, enough that I'm assuming you're still planning on doing a co-op review of it.
Yeah, I do. I've gotten sidetracked with some other stuff for the site, but it's hopefully sometime this week we'll get that up.
Here's a preview. the only way to beat the computer is to play co-op.
Yeah, we had quite the time there. We had what do we play, like four games before we finally won one?
That winning game was like the miracle on ice, I swear.
It really was.
I don't think I've high-fived someone in a co-op session in quite some time, and we did it every time we scored.
Yeah, it was definitely like total relief every time we scored in that. I think we ended up winning three games by the end. We had a couple, we went to overtime, and we went to the shootout, and
oh.
It was, I don't know, it was a lot of fun, though, for sure.
Oh, definitely. It was definitely fun. It was just a little high on the difficulty, and we were too manly to knock it down a peg.
Yeah, I mean, we weren't even playing on hard. We were playing on, like, the normal difficulty.
It was, yeah.
You know, but we were playing in a mode where you basically build up a team from, like, packs of cards. Like, you buy packs of cards with virtual currency that has players and stat boost and stuff like that, and you build your team from that. So it wasn't like it was the best team, so that was part of it, but the teams that we played, like against the computer, weren't that much better than us, like the ratings and stuff. So,
yeah, and it's something I noticed because I started playing NHL 10 after this, and I was looking, and all the teams pretty much have the same stats. I mean, with like everyone is up in between, you know, 78 and 82 in every stat. So,
yeah.
What difference do the stats make if everyone's that high?
I got my first, so I bought my first big pack in it. I got enough credits to get the big pack, and I got my first NHL player.
So, ooh.
Like, he was, I don't even remember who it was. It wasn't like anybody great, but he was like a 85 rating. So, and like everyone else on my team is like 70 to 74 maybe. So
it doesn't matter if you're pulling Ovechkin or Kovalchuk or something. You're like, oh my god, it's someone who has stat of 80.
You know, it's like a fourth liner on the on some team, but it was like my miracle player. So
his shot accuracy was over 20.
Yeah. But yeah, so that, I'm really kind of addicted to that mode, the whole card collecting thing mixed with the build your own team and stuff, and it's nice that you can play it in co-op, either, you know, offline or online.
Oh yeah,
and stuff like that. So
I think it would be a cold day in hell when the NHL series doesn't let you play co-op.
Yeah, yeah, you know, like we don't have all the NHL games in our database, but they're kind of like, it's like, yeah, you can play them co-op.
Yeah,
it just makes sense. In most of the sports games, you can, with the exception of like the baseball games and stuff. They at least let you play offline co-op.
Hey man, co-op pitching. I'll be the catcher.
Excuse me.
No, I'm not going to excuse you. That was terrible. Sorry. What'd you do that for?
I'm I'm still sick from that 2 weeks ago, the last podcast. I'm not 100% over it. It's like just lingering. Me and Izzy have been kind of like passing it back and forth.
Maybe that's why I'm so tired, you know, lately. I'm still recovering from my sickness too.
So what else? Is that all you've been playing then?
Yeah, pretty much. I've been playing a lot of WoW again because the expansion's coming soon, and you guys don't really want to hear about my warlock.
No, not really.
Not really.
All right, so, yeah, we talked to NHL 11, been playing. I also played Borderlands for co-op night. It was a real treat because I got to play with Mikey Newman, who's the creative director there at Gearbox. And
Scooter.
Yeah, the voice of Scooter. We heard some interesting stories, and, you know, he told us how, like, all these people are always submitting, like, ridiculous game ideas to them. And, it's just like they're not sure like where these people are coming up with these ideas, and you know, he was talking about everyone that came in to play with us, you know, try to get them, you know, when's Duke Nukem coming out, you know, when's Borderlands 2 coming out. It's always like the first questions out of these people's mouths. It's like,
oh, of course,
like, you know, but it was a lot of fun, and I forgot how much fun Borderlands is. And the first like hour and a half, all we did was the first quest in Claptrap's thing, where you just collect Claptrap parts.
Oh, man.
And we had it up, I think the fourth iteration is like collect 500, and that was what we were at. And he's like, is this what we're going to do all night? I go, no. I said, I just haven't gone on to find where the next quest is.
Well, doing that really drove home the fact that Claptrap likes to say, "How do you like them apples?"
Yeah. Well, that was actually brought up too. It was pretty funny. But yeah, so that was pretty good. I've also been playing a little bit of Valkyria Chronicles 2 here or there.
Excellent.
Yeah, whenever I feel like pulling out the PSP, I'll play a mission or two.
Have you gotten to the part where it gets ridiculously difficult yet?
No, I am only in February in the timeline. You know, I've gotten the tank and stuff and all that good stuff. So it's only, I don't know, maybe a dozen missions in.
Yeah, it does. I don't know how far you played in the first one, but it pulls the same trick where everything is really easy and then all of a sudden it's impossible. And then it'll be easy again. And then, the problem the series has as a whole, and you know, it's, I still love it despite it, is that the difficulty curve is more like a spike strip in the middle of a flat road. Uh-huh. Like you'll be cruising along, then all of a sudden, you know, difficulty spike blows out your tires and you can't go anywhere. And then, you know, finally AAA comes up, patches you up, you move along the road, and then, you know, like 3 or 4 hours later, same thing happens.
Yeah. No, I mean, I haven't really had any trouble with any of the missions. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I like the style of it too, like the times that it does go into like the little animations and stuff.
Yeah.
It fits really well. And it's a good handheld game. The missions never take too long.
Well, the third game was recently announced, and it looks like it's going to follow a lot of the same structure, although it takes place as a side story to the original game, so it's during the old conflict.
Interesting.
So it seems cool, but it's the third art style in three games, and I wish they'd go back to the one from the first one, because it looked very Miyazaki-esque, and it was beautiful. Despite even though all these games are, they don't have as great of graphics or anything as the original PS3 one did, I would like them to, you know, try and edge back towards that style, even if it's only in the character portraits, you know?
Yeah. I've also been playing Halo Reach. Every day I kind of fire it up, look at the challenges, see if I want to complete any of them. Still do my legendary playthrough by myself. I actually made some progress with that this weekend. I am on mission 7, or I'm at the very end of 6, which is the on the Covenant cruiser.
Oh man!
The elites are just
brutal.
So brutal on legendary, and like I just like my guns. It feels like I'm throwing like paper balls at the elites. Like it just don't do any damage.
Yeah, that one stuck me for a while because I hit a bad checkpoint when I was playing through on heroic.
Yeah,
and there's the. The only two enemies remaining in the room were a grunt with a fuel rod gun and like one of the yellow elites, and he had, I think, the force gun. I forget what the real name for that is. The one that, you know, fires like the gravity beam and it knocks everybody out of the way.
Oh yeah.
So he had one of those, and there's a fuel rod, and where it checkpointed me, they were running at me. So, like, every time I died, I would have to immediately, like, you know, sprint out of the way because I was about to get, you know, killed in one hit by that fuel rod gun. And so I'd prioritize the fuel rod, and then I'd get, you know, shanked from behind by the elite, and it took me probably 20 minutes to kill those two guys.
Yeah, I've really. There's only been a couple times that I really kind of got stuck. For the most part, it's been pretty manageable. It's just you do have to go pretty slow and make sure you let your shields recharge and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and it is a lot of fun. I wouldn't be doing it if I wasn't having fun.
You just want that 250 achievement points for doing that?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, my game glitched, so I didn't even get the achievements for beating it in the first place. So, I mean, I'm going to, basically, if I do this, I'll get all the beating it legendary solo, beating it in legendary difficulty, beating it normal, beating it heroic, like in one shot. I'm hoping to get 1,000 out of 1,000. I think another achievement, though, is glitched in the mind, the pink combined explosion one.
Oh, I did that on Firefight.
Yeah, like, all you have to do is kill 10 guys with, like, you know, the needle rifle or whatever, right?
You have to kill them. There's a trick to it. It's not as simple as you think. You have to kill them in the space of one life.
Okay.
So if you die, it resets the count.
Oh, all right.
So. And you have to do the other thing is the super combine explosion can happen after the enemy's dead, and if you don't kill them with it, it doesn't count.
Okay.
So you basically have to fire it into packs of into like crowds of grunts to get it easily.
Interesting.
But yeah, I did it on I was just screwing around in one of the firefight modes. I turned like invincibility on and all that, you know, or made myself practically invincible and ran around for 45 minutes because not because I was trying to, you know, whore for achievements, but just because I had beaten it and I really wanted to just murder elites without dying.
You know what achievement I did get during my legendary playthrough, the Jack of Banshee one?
Yeah.
And it was interesting. The one I got it on was the Spire, you know, where you have to get all the way to the top of the big thing.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be such a bitch, but the Banshee did dive bomb at me.
And it got stuck in the wall, because that's how I got mine.
Yeah, it bounced off a rock, and he went to turn around, and I just quick grabbed on, and it just flew straight to the top of the thing, and I avoided, like, all the crap on the bottom.
I swear I spent 45 minutes trying to... You know where you first get the jetpack?
Yeah.
And there's like six banshees that fly by.
Yeah.
I must have spent 45 minutes trying to land that. And I never did it. And then I remembered the other place where banshees appeared. And I went back there and this stupid banshee just kind of floated around and ran into a wall and fell out of the sky. And while it was like, while it was trying to like unglitch itself, I hijacked it and got my achievement. Nice. But the achievement that I'm still, you know, really angry that I haven't gotten was the do an assassination to prevent yourself from dying.
Yeah.
And I have done it at least 10 times. Like, I've done it, like, I've seen videos of people doing it, and I've done it multiple times, sometimes multiple times in a row, and I have not gotten the achievement yet. And
did you watch the Achievement Hunters video on how to do it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought that one covered it pretty well.
Yeah, and I was doing at, I was trying. You know, I found places where I could drop on them. Like there's the one where you have a jetpack and you can like just drop down on. There's a bunch of elites. You can just drop down on them and try and get it.
Yeah,
I could like they'd always step out of the way at the last second, and I wasn't able to get. So I went to the area where they were showing how to do it, and that's where I kept landing it. Over and over and over again, and I never got it. And there's like four different places that the elite can stand that you can actually assassinate him from. So, and I hit him in like all four places, and I never got it. Made me very angry. But you know, if you're going for a thousand, are you really, really wanting to grind out Lieutenant Colonel?
That's the next level. I thought that I thought that's the one after.
Are you a captain?
I thought Lieutenant Colonel was after the warrant officer level 3. Or I thought Colonel, then Lieutenant Colonel.
Well, Lieutenant Colonel is below a colonel in, like, real-world rankings. I mean, Lieutenant Colonel, you still have, like, captain. You have captain and major to go through it before you get to a Lieutenant Colonel rank.
Let me see. I'm pulling it up now. I saw a good chart. All right, here we go. Yeah, so it goes captain, major, and then lieutenant colonel.
Yeah, you got a ways.
Well, it looks like actually... So here's the point breakdown. I'm a warrant officer grade 3 now. I'm like 3/4 of the way to captain. All right, so it's 33,000 credits from warrant officer grade 2, or from grade 3 to captain. Then from captain to captain grade 1, it's 66,000. But then the three captain grades are only 23,000. So it looks like the major levels are the big ones, and then the minor levels are a lot less. And then it looks like, so for major, first level is 46,000, then the grade ones of those are only 25,000.
So yeah, I don't know if I want to play that much Halo Reach. That's an awful lot of credits.
I guess.
I mean, keep in mind, we played the game for, you know, when we were talking about it when it came out, we had played the game for like 25, 30 hours, and we had just broken like the, like 30,000 credit barrier.
Yeah. I've been getting a ton, though, for my legendary playthrough, getting the commendations. Like, there's been times where I'll play the game for 20 minutes and get like 8,000 credits. Because it, you know, because I'm hitting the gold level and the higher levels of the commendations, so that helps quite a bit too. Anyway, that's enough talking about Halo Reach. Finally, last game I've played is Civilization V. Started a third playthrough with that with the Russians, and I played a little bit last night of co-op in it actually. Someone told me that it was Mikey Newman from Gearbox had mentioned that it actually has a co-op mode and how it works, and it's pretty cool. So basically what you can do is you can pick teams before you start, and players on the same team will share knowledge as well as any discoveries they make. They'll share. So like if you find ruins and you get like 5 happiness because of it, both players get the +5 happiness.
Nice.
If both players are researching the same thing, it takes half the time, or whatever the scale of time is. If it's like, I imagine if there's 3, it takes, you know, 1/3 the time, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
but yeah, once somebody discovers something, both players get it. We didn't get a chance. Oh, no, we do. I actually... The other players get the benefit from wonders as well. So when you do get a natural or get a wonder, the player will get the benefit from that. It's pretty cool. Plus, you know, you share the map. You can still do diplomacy options. You can share resources and units and stuff like that. And the multiplayer does some nice things to keep it going fast. It turns off like the battle animations and things like that. You kind of both go at the same time when you move, and then you wait. Everybody moves at the same time, and then it waits, and then you go. And I'm still enjoying the heck out of Civ 5.
Sounds like it, but you know, most people try and justify their crack addictions.
Yeah, well, it was funny because when I added it to our database today, I had looked at Amazon and it only had like 2 stars, and I was like, "What is wrong with these people?" And I looked at a couple of the reviews, and most of them it was people like, "Oh, they don't like the changes and stuff."
Yeah,
I guess apparently a lot of them are people against Steam, and they don't like the DRM that Steam presents. Like that was the biggest complaint. So everyone was a 1-star campaign, you know.
Yeah, you know, it happens every time, and it happened with, Spore and a few other games in recent memory where everyone went on Amazon.
I just had no idea that knowledgeable PC gamers hated Steam. Like, it's probably the best...
The thing is, there are people that are so anti-DRM that they refuse to compromise for anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know, I remember a lot of people were pissed off at Dawn of War because it used... Dawn of War 2 because it used Games for Windows Live.
Yeah.
But it also required that you install Steam.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
So everyone was, oh, it's so much DRM. It's like, I would rather have Games for Windows Live and Steam running at the same time than StarForce or Securom or any of those other things. Because at least those DRM schemes provide some type of service.
Yeah.
In addition to copy protection.
So there's 341 reviews, and it's 2.5 stars on Amazon, so...
Yeah.
All right, anyway, let's move on. Let's talk about This Week in Co-op and talk about some co-op news. And since we were talking about Steam surpasses 30 million registered users.
That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people. That is far more than Xbox Live.
And more than double WoW's population.
Yeah. And PSN as well. But I think both Xbox Live and PSN have been touting around 25 million registered accounts. The console, I think Xbox, the last worldwide sales numbers we had were around 45 million people. Obviously, you can't really judge PC sales numbers and how many of those people are using Steam, but 30 million people is an impressive number.
It is. That's an awful lot of people.
So, If you're on Steam, if you don't know, we do have a Co-Optimus community on there. So you can join us. You should be able to find us pretty easily. And play some co-op games. I swear this year I'm going to have more PC game events. I mean, Steam makes it so freaking easy to set up. I don't know why I've been slacking. So
because you're nose deep in Civ 5?
Could be part of it. But let's see. Fable 3. It has its Kinect content cut. It's out of there. But luckily, some other co-op goodies remained intact. Basically, there were two mini-games they were planning for Fable 3. One was a statue sculpting game with Kinect, which, I don't know, kind of sounds interesting. And the other was a fruit-throwing game, which does not sound fun at all.
No, especially when you have things like Fruit Ninja on the mobile phones. And I'd rather play with fruit that way.
So yeah, these have been cut. They said that possibly maybe see them back in there at some point, but they just didn't see much value in the resources of that for launch.
Kind of like Kinect.
Yeah.
Oh, did I go there?
Fable 2 had a pretty interesting economy thing it introduced where, you know, you could buy properties and you'd sign out of the game and you'd come back and your properties would have accumulated money for you while you weren't playing.
I cheated with that.
But yeah, a lot of people did. They tried to set the system date and all that other stuff. Well, I guess it's kind of going to make a return in the new one, but it's going to be a lot more in depth. You actually can, have like upscale properties. You'll be in charge of furnishing it and adding things and stuff like that. But the really interesting thing for co-op is there's going to be this concept of business partners.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can not only marry your co-op partner, but you can go into a business relationship and you guys kind of, share funds and pool stuff from your investments and all that other kind of good stuff. So I'm curious to see how that'll work. If you form a business partnership and you're separate, like you're not in the same game, if the game's smart enough to still share the gold between, or if you have to be in the same session, I'm not exactly sure how it works.
That's all well and good, but I'm still intensely curious about how you're supposed to have a baby with your co-op partner. Because there's an achievement for that.
Well, Mike, you see, when a man and a woman we won't go there.
Please, let's not.
Hey, guess what? Guitar Hero Warriors of Rock? It sold like crap.
I'm shocked.
It sold 89,000 copies in the first 5 days, which to the normal person might not sound too bad. But when you put it in perspective, I think it was Guitar Hero 3 sold...
5 mil.
Well, in the first 5 days, it was something like 1.3 million.
Yeah, that's right.
So there's definitely a downward trend in the music genre.
See, I know gamers have been kind of down on Guitar Hero for a while, so that's not really surprising, but I really wonder what's going to happen with Rock Band. Like, if people are going to say, well, Rock Band is a better deal.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing is, like...
How many people really need to play pro guitar?
Yeah, that's... I mean, both me and you, we've played a ton of music games in our day. We both liked a lot of Rock Band, but when was the last time you actually played Rock Band?
Last time I played Rock Band 2 was, I think, March.
Right, so it's been a good chunk of time. I can't even tell you the last time I fired up a music game.
Well, the only time I ever bring it out is if I have company.
Yeah. So, I don't know, and I don't even have any desire, like, despite, like, all this, like, some of the awesome songs I see, be like, oh yeah, that'd be fun to play. It'd be like, I'd play that song once or twice and that'd be it. Like, I just... And especially with, like, Rock Band does such a good job where, like, all the music's compatible.
Yeah.
You know, across the platforms. Like, I don't know.
It's like, why buy... Okay, I don't... Take the instruments out of it. All of the DLC for Rock Band 3 is going to be compatible with my version of Rock Band. So the only real reason, outside of getting keyboards and the pro guitars and stuff like that, to buy the disc is to get the 88 songs or whatever that's on that. But otherwise, you've got something like 2,000 songs to choose from. See, I don't know. They did a really good job. I think their business model was brilliant. They designed a platform that you could choose to upgrade or, you know, leave alone and still get, you know, almost all the value out of.
Yeah.
But I might get dragged back into Rock Band 2 because I found out one of my favorite musicians is taking one of his albums and putting it on Rock Band Network. So that might be a reason to go back in. But I was talking to my wife the other day. It's like, I'm really not pumped for Rock Band 3. As keyboards seem like they would be.
Yeah, I'd like to get, but you know what music came though? I did just get a copy in today of
DJ Hero 2?
No, I didn't get that, but I'm kind of psyched for
Power Gig?
No, I didn't get that either.
Rock of the Dead?
Nope, try again.
Rhythm Heaven?
No, Def Jam Rap Star.
Oh my. Is OPP in that track list?
It is, I believe, yes.
Oh my god, I'm going to need to make a trip up there.
And it has, the best part is, you know, it has native camera support and everything, so, plus it has like a little video editor.
But you can only snip 30 seconds out, so you got to make it count.
Yeah, it'll be my best OPP ever.
Is that YouTube video of us still exist? Is that still up there?
Yeah, probably.
Oh my.
Yeah, we don't. Anyway, let's move on, and let's talk about Duke Nukem Forever.
Let's.
And if you purchase Borderlands on Steam, you're in luck, because they're giving out Duke Nukem Forever demo keys, even if you didn't purchase the Game of the Year edition, which is the only way to get access to it. At least it was the only way to get access to it.
Until I found out, I didn't have to do anything.
Yep. All you got to do is fire it up, and I guess there's a little... like a link on the games page, right?
You check your you pull up your CD key.
Okay.
And it should be there.
Cool beans. So they you know, we don't know when the demo's coming out, but they say it will be out before launch, and I guess these people that have the early access thing are gonna be lucky and play before everybody else.
We'll see.
We shall. Resistance 3, The details are flowing thanks to a Game Informer preview of it, and it looks like it's getting a return to the story-based co-op of the first game. Players will play as one of two characters, and each one has their own little unique, I guess, play on things. And to some people, the 8-player co-op...
What, you don't like the note I put in our show notes?
I read it, but I neglected to repeat it verbatim.
Okay.
Because there are some people that really enjoyed that. We had some people say they put, I'm trying to look right now, a couple dozens of hours into it. Where was it? Somebody, I want to say someone said 100 hours, but I feel bad for them.
Because that mode, I played it with Jason. We did a 2-player local one, and it was just... I hated it.
Yeah, it was okay. I played the beta of it, but it felt very flat.
I just remember it felt like... And I believe I said this at the time, too, is it felt like a... It felt like Hellgate London, and I had, you know, already had a bad taste in my mouth about that type of game, you know, because of that, and the game just felt like it again, and you'd fight a big enemy, and you'd just be pumping billions of bullets into it, and it wouldn't die.
Yeah.
It's like, my weapons feel ineffectual, and it's really easy to die, and the checkpointing sucks, and all this other stuff, and I know a lot of people liked it, but I didn't.
So the good news is the new co-op mode in Resistance 3 will be online and split-screen. So whether you're sitting on the couch or playing over the internet, you can co-op your Resistance 3. I like the setting for the game. It sounds interesting. They said that basically the world has entered into an ice age following the invasion.
And then Resistance 4 will have entered a lava age.
And then the forest age. No, but anyway... So that comes out sometime this year. Dungeon Defenders is a little indie. Well, I guess it's indie. title that's a cross between tower defense and an RPG. I know we talked about it before. It started as an Unreal Engine 3 mod,
yep.
UDK game that they built in, I think it was like 2 weeks or something like that. But now they've built it out to a full title. What's really cool about it is if you have a PC and the Android version, you can play co-op together between the phone and the PC. Sounds really interesting. The Android version and apparently the iPhone version as well, they're both using identical assets from the PC versions and the Xbox version and the PS3, you know, because they're all running Unreal Engine 3.
I mean, it's kind of staggering that the Epic Citadel demo for the iPhone is just crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it looks so damn good. Like, I still pull that. Yeah, the graphics hitch every little bit. But, you know, generally it's running at least 30 frames a second at all times. And it's just, the lighting is good. And it's got, like, reflections. And, you know, the water looks convincing. And the sun looks convincing. It looks like an Unreal Engine 3 thing, but scaled back.
Yeah, I mean, they said that all the assets and stuff are identical. The only thing different is some of the rendering passes have been taken out.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on and talk about probably, I'd say, the best news for a lot of people this past 2 weeks, and that's the X-Men arcade game is coming back for PSN and Xbox Live. That's the classic 6-player co-op game.
Yes.
It's going to have a mix of shared screen and online co-op.
Drop in, drop out.
Yeah, drop in, drop out. The PS3 can have 6 players local. Or Xbox 360 will have 4. I guess they really didn't do too much to the game otherwise. Tweak the graphics a little bit, you know, with some rendering filters or stuff, but
that 2x Eagle filter and, you know, leaderboards, you know.
Yeah. But I guess there's they're adding a few difficulty modes to it as well.
Dip switches.
Yeah, that you know, for most people that was one of the big beat 'em ups of, I guess it's what, mid-90s.
Yeah, and it was always cool, especially if you saw that 6-player machine where they had the two big ass CRT monitors hooked, you know, side by side.
Yep.
But the real trick about that game, you know, it's a brawler and it's fairly competent, but the real reason that game is classic is because it has one of the absolute worst Japanese to English translations ever. Do you remember such classic lines as "X-Men, welcome to die"?
Yeah.
I mean, if they better not change that, or I will be very angry. But yeah, the thing that seemed really cool to me was that you can mix local players with online players, and that's the only way to get 6 players on the 360, just because of the IR. Limitations, and the PS3 can have 6 because it can support up to 8 Bluetooth devices. But
yeah,
that'll be really interesting if you have a bunch of, like, if you have like headsets and things like that, if that eats into it or not. Not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's supposed to be out this year, apparently. So that's good news.
Yeah.
Let's see. Finally, last bit of a story. Dead Nation, which is a top-down shooter for the PlayStation Network from the developers of Super Stardust HD.
Mm-hmm.
They announced that the game is going to have online co-op. Originally, it wasn't planned to ship with online co-op, but they decided to add it in. And when I saw that, I was like, let me just, you know, email the guy. Because the PlayStation blog, it was posted there, and they always had the developers do the posts themselves, which I really like. I really like that they do that there. And then a lot of times they'll comment. But I emailed him and asked him some questions, and he got back to me regarding it. You know, and I asked, you know, wanted to know, was it a business decision? Do they think it, you know, because he said that the team was working overtime basically to have it done. They were working weekends and stuff like that. And it's like, well, if they did that, they're going to have to pay them more. So obviously they wanted to, you know, is it a business decision that will they make more money because of it? So obviously he had to run a lot of it through PR because they were, I guess, sensitive questions.
You could say that.
He answered them pretty well. The one thing that I thought was interesting, and hopefully I'm not overstepping anything here, because he actually asked me some stuff then in the email back, and he wanted to know, you know, do we have any estimation of how many people are actually playing co-op mode in these games, you know, online and offline? And he had thought that maybe it really wasn't that big of a portion of players. And he said that, you know, the challenge in development in adding co-op, you know, especially online, is it's quite a big task, and it's quite hard to estimate whether all the work is actually adding enough to sales to cover the cost.
Yeah.
Which is basically my question to him is it a good business decision? You know, did you do this because it's a business decision? And I guess with them being a small developer and not having any prior experience with it, they can't really... They don't have anything to base it off of.
You should have linked him back the Randy Pitchford article
I did.
We had.
So I responded, and I can basically read my response here. And I said, as your question, it's a bit hard for me to say. You know, we started this site almost three years ago, and since then I've seen co-op grow from something no one even mentioned to being a huge bullet point on the back of AAA title boxes. So, you know, if you look at our traffic for the past, you know, it's grown consistently.
Yeah.
So our most popular sections of the site are the game lists themselves, showing which games have the co-op features. So that's the main reason people visit the site. They want to know which games have co-ops, which games they can play with their friends, and how they can play it, whether it's offline or online, etc., etc. I said, perhaps the best way to judge the impact of a co-op game is to take the approach that Randy Pitchford has done with Gearbox. By utilizing achievements or trophies that are for co-op modes, he's able to get a good idea of how many people are actually utilizing that mode of play. And I said for him, he actually has an advantage as being the developers of Dead Nation, because their game, the only way to get it is online. So they know 100% of their user base, whatever the achievements or whatever the trophies are that they get, is an accurate percentage.
Yeah.
So, you know, I said... I'll keep going down here. Say that, you know, when a game does have a co-op mode that only caters to half the segment, you know, only has offline, only has online, we always get the vocal minority in that says, oh, well, now I'm not going to buy this. Now I'm not going to, you know, because it's not catering to the mode of co-op I want.
Yo, System Link.
Yeah. I said, you know, one thing I think a lot of developers overlook with co-op is the potential to push sales in a sort of a social aspect. So this is especially true with the popularity of online co-op. So if you have a four-player online co-op game with four friends looking to play, that's a guaranteed four sales, right? So it's hard to judge. It's harder to judge for offline because someone might come over to someone's house and they play. You don't necessarily know that that's the reason it translates into another sale. But if you have both, you know, they come over to their friend's house to play. They're like, oh, I really like this game. They go home and buy it, and then they can play online co-op together.
Yeah.
So, and then I pointed them to a recent that they actually Bungie had posted, and it said twice as many people had completed the campaign on Legendary cooperatively as done it solo.
So, you know, 10 people co-op, 5 people solo.
Yeah. But yeah, so I thought it was an interesting thing, and it's good to see a perspective in someone so honest about it and all that. So that was the developer's house mark, and I guess he's the CEO. His name is Ilari Kutuyan. I'm murdering his Finnish name. I'm sorry. But yeah. So, but Dead Nation looks pretty good. It looks like Left 4 Dead, but in a top-down shooter. I mean, it really does. They even have, like, Special Infected. They have their own little boomer-like guy.
Yeah.
But the graphics look amazing. I mean, Super Stardust HD was a really, really pretty game, so...
I was a big fan of Super Stardust, so I'm definitely looking forward to this one.
Yeah, me too. So, that's it for co-op news. upcoming co-op releases. Time Crisis Rising Storm is out today. We were talking actually before the podcast about it's a really good value at $50 because not only do you get a Time Crisis game and Time Crisis 4 and a game called Deadstorm Pirates, which was previously only an arcade shooter, you get a 16-player multiplayer versus mode that's a first-person shooter and then like another first-person mode for Time Crisis for $50. So it's a PlayStation Move compatible game. Looks pretty interesting. I am probably going to order it on Amazon as soon as we're done with this call for the site. As well as the really awesome Marvin the Martian looking blaster attachment.
Yeah, I saw that. It looks really like interesting.
Marvin the Martian's thing.
Yeah. Q36 explosive space modulator.
Exactly. I actually have a, I don't know if you saw it, but I have a Marvin the Martian desk lamp.
Yeah.
He's, I love the little guy. What else? Site stuff. What do we do? Some reviews. Andrew reviewed Explosionaid from Mommy's Best Games, which I played a bit of it. It's pretty fun. It's a bit different than I thought it was. You kind of have individual levels, and it's kind of like a puzzle platformer kind of a thing. Mark reviewed Guitar Hero Warriors of Rock, and despite the poor sales, it reviewed pretty well.
Well, I mean, all those music games have really good co-op, so regardless of if they sell or even if the tracks are good, you know, when you rate it on its co-op features, they're usually pretty high.
Yeah.
And I recall the overall score was not quite as good.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the co-op score, I think, was like a 4, and the overall was like a 3.
Yeah.
So what else did we... I reviewed the PlayStation Move, the hardware for it.
And I have one thing to add because I didn't chime into that forum thread.
What's that?
That when you're rating hardware, you have to rate its potential because that's all there is.
Yeah. It's like, so there was a big discussion about people thought I reviewed it too high because none of the games were that great for it. I mean, the games themselves weren't super, but they showed off the potential of the hardware and what can be done with it, and that's really all you want to know. There's a lot of games announced, big games, you know, big names in games for the PlayStation Move, like Killzone 3, SOCOM, you know, like a lot of AAA titles are going to be utilizing it, so it's good to know that the thing is not a total waste of your time and that it works as it advertised, and, you know, comparing it to existing stuff on the market like the PlayStation or like the Nintendo Wii.
Yeah.
How it ranks up. I mean, I don't know any other way to review it.
Well, the real trick is going to be when Kinect comes out, because I assume we'll be reviewing that as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'll have a direct comparison.
Yeah, exactly. I was impressed with the hardware. I won't say I'm going to enjoy a lot of the games that, you know, use it, but I can see some fun and potential. The sports game was more fun than I thought it would be. It was a lot more fun than Wii Sports, let's put it that way.
That's not hard to do, though.
Yeah. And Cat reviewed Dead Rising 2. We had a bunch of features. The NES turned 25, and we kind of looked back at it and gave our top 5 NES co-op games. Mark posted a casual Friday where he talked about the Dungeons & Dragons board game Castle Ravenloft.
I really want to buy that now.
I've seen a lot of people talking about that, so yeah, I might have to check it out. We had a co-op couples where Jim and his wife partook in some firefight action. And Sam went to the Eurogamer Expo. See, it pays off to have a UK correspondent.
It does.
So he went to the Eurogamer Expo and got some hands-on with some stuff and brought back some really excellent coverage, so be sure to check that out. Kat posted in on the download DLC perks and stuff. I can't remember what that was about.
About DLC?
DLC perks and stuff.
Perks in stuff. You know, when you download, like, the Psycho suit for Dead Rising 2, and it makes the game super easy.
Yeah,
I believe is the direction that went.
And we talked about the Dead Nation interview, so check that out. And I posted a gallery of figures I saw at the New York Comic Con.
Yeah, yeah, you came dangerously close to turning this site into Tomopop.
There's just so many good-looking statues and figures. And, you know, the one surprising thing about that was Square Enix is getting into game figures, like, big.
Oh, they've been doing that for a few years. And when Advent Children came out, they had, like, the $500, you know,
yeah,
sculpted.
But they have Halo figures, Metal Gear Solid figures. Like, they have all these other franchises that aren't Square Enix ones that they're doing figures for. And that was what surprised me.
Hmm.
And they're like these other, you know, like the other aforementioned figures, they're really nice looking. The Halo Reach ones were very tasty.
The only game figure I need is my one from Persona 3.
Is it like a little schoolgirl or something?
It's a schoolgirl shooting herself in the head.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. I did, when my first 360 blew up, I actually used it to great effect.
Nice.
Yeah.
I know I told you, but I picked up a Lion-O figure at the new, that was my purchase from Thundercats.
Do you just say Thundercats ho slightly under your breath every time you see it?
No, but you know it'd be cool if the Eye of Thundera lit up on it. I should mod it, put a little LED.
I'm sure it's possible.
All right. What else? Buy our shirts, damn it. You know what? Because we like you so much, we're going to give you a coupon for shirts. And we got actually a 10% off coupon. All you got to do is enter the code COOP10, and you'll get 10% off your entire order at Split Reason when you buy our shirts. So buy them, damn it.
Buy them. Let me tweak your nipples.
Did you hear the end of the last episode with Kat?
I didn't.
Yeah, so Kat mentioned her nipples and something about them being caressed, and I told her that, yeah, explicit tag all the way on the last episode.
Oh, my.
So, if that didn't get people to buy shirts, nothing will.
Well, I can think of a few ways. I can threaten to take my shirt off.
Oh,
if
yeah.
People don't people, buy please. Our shirts.
People, please. Leaf feedback on iTunes and follow us on Twitter. We are Co-Optimus without the dash. And one other plug we wanted to do, our weekend editor, Lauren Halleck, who's the EIC over at Colony of Gamers. He put a book out and,
an ebook
you can get on the Kindle. It is called,
Growing Up 8-Bit.
Growing Up 8-Bit. Thank you.
Yes, and it's not just on the Kindle. It's on pretty much any e-reader platform you choose.
Yeah, I guess he just published the Nook version.
Well, and I think he also had a PDF version up for everybody else.
Maybe. It's $4, though. So basically what he did is he covered, 200-some games from, like, 1980 to 1990. Some good stuff there, so check it out. We have an excerpt from the book of Contra, which kind of gives you an idea of how the style of the book goes. And Lauren's angle is pretty interesting, though. I guess in the first book you don't get it so much, but apparently, not apparently, he was born without one of his eyes. So he's one of the 10% of the people that can't see 3D. And it comes with some other challenges, so I guess that's kind of part of the aspect of the book. Kind of the angle.
The hook, if you will.
Yes, the hook of the book.
Yes.
And finally, we have a voicemail number. We've actually had it for a couple weeks. We actually have some voicemails I got to play.
Oh, my.
But, I'm a horrible podcast host.
It's okay. I think we both are.
646-926-6748. That is our Google Voice voicemail. Call us, leave us a message. We will play it on the air. Try not to swear, so we can
leave the swearing to us. We're experts.
Yeah, we majored in swearing in college. We have a degree in it.
Yes,
call us. Tell us how we're doing. Let us know what your favorite co-op memory is. Maybe your favorite co-op game. Something that's grinding your gears in the co-op world. I don't know. Let's see what happens. I think that's it.
I think it is, too.
All right, so this is Co-op the Cast, episode 53. Thanks for listening.
All right, here's a special feature for you all. We have a interview with Andy Schatz from Pocket Watch Games about his upcoming co-op title, Monaco. And Nick and I talk about games and the indie scene with him, and enjoy the interview.
All right, so Mike and I actually, we're the ones that we played in co-op when he was up here the other weekend and stuff, and we really enjoyed what we played, and we noticed that there's the five character classes you have in that. That's the PAX build, you said, right?
Right, right.
And then there's like three others that you kind of, that are locked.
Right.
So we have like the redhead, the gentleman, and the rat. So what are your plans for those three, and are there more planned, actually?
No, there are just eight planned. There's the four main characters and then four unlockable characters. And the redhead is the seductress. So she can actually distract guards, and then she can actually – her special ability is that she can charm them, and they'll follow her around and open doors for her and protect her while as long as they remain charmed.
If we could have used that.
And the rat, his special ability is that he can snitch on his teammates, and anytime a guard is like shooting at him, he can actually basically give himself up, and the guard he can tell the guards where all of his teammates are, so the guards will go off and chase his teammates instead of him. But his passive ability is one that I haven't announced yet, but it's one that actually helps the team. So the rat is one of those characters. It's like you really don't want to have them on your team, but they're so helpful to the rest of the team, you kind of want them on their team. So, he's a really interesting character. I haven't announced what the gentleman does yet. So that'll come out as time goes by. I actually had an inspiration just recently with the locksmith. Some of these things are still a little bit in flux. I'm trying to make sure everything feels really balanced and easy to use and fun. Mm-hmm. But the locksmith, his passive ability, of course, is the simplest in that he just gets through locked doors and safes much faster than everyone else. And it's really useful. But his active ability is much harder to use than everyone else's. He can weld doors shut, but it's kind of hard to use. And I actually just realized the other day, it would accomplish the same thing if he was basically just able to lay down like a landmine type of thing. Right now, if he welds a door shut, it any guards that try and go through that door, it'll take them 30 seconds to get through or 20 seconds to get through it. But if he can drop down landmines or some equivalent of landmines to knock out a guard, it's essentially doing the same thing.
Right.
So except much easier to use.
Yeah, I did try. I played the locksmith on my first game, and I was enjoying the safe cracking and the running through those locked doors and leaving Nick behind. But I couldn't really get the welding to work. So it's good to hear that you're thinking about it.
Yeah. All these things are still subject to balance and change. As I played through, that was one of the things I saw a lot at PAX that really no one was able to effectively use the welding kit. It was fun though. PAX was really a blast to, just because the players all got it. Like I didn't need to do quite as much coaching as I have done in the past. And so it tells me that the game is getting there. You know, it's getting closer since people are having fun without, you know, a whole lot of input from me. So, because I can't be there in every living room that wants to play the game.
Yeah, it did feel pretty intuitive to me. I mean, aside from the locksmith's ability, which you said, you know, everyone seems to have a little trouble with, you know, we sat down, just fired it up, picked a couple players and just went and basically improvised our way through the levels. And I had a really good time with it, and some of those levels are real bastard, man. Those guards.
there's
one where I think is the mansion where you're going in the sewers.
The museum.
Oh, the museum.
Museum, uh-huh.
And Nick decided that he was going to alert a bunch of guards, and like four or five went after him, and I went to try and, you know, revive him, and a dude came right around the corner and shot me where I stood.
That's awesome. I wish I could remember the which exact build I sent you. I actually made some of the levels harder, and I'm wondering if I sent you the build that was after I made the levels a little harder. Let's see. Did you? No, I think. Well, yeah, the museum. That museum level is hard, no matter what. I didn't actually make that one harder. That one stayed the same. But the other ones I made, the mansion I made a little bit harder, and I've added in a few more levels since PAX. It's fun because the levels can get pretty tough later on, but once you start to really learn how to use your character skills and work together, it's a very much a skill based game that, like, you know, you really begin to figure out how to play the game, and you get a lot better at it as you keep playing.
Yeah, and
I was gonna say, I definitely see like a lot of depth there, since you know you have eight characters. There's gonna be a lot of replayability for people as they learn different combinations of classes to have together to work their way through.
Yeah, it really seemed to me like it would be advantageous to split people off, achieve an objective and then, you know, roll together to complete others. And it really seems like, you know, depending on who you bring to the level, that could change incredibly drastically, actually.
Yeah, and there's actually a lot more that you guys haven't seen in terms of, like, you know, security devices and enemy types and things like that. So the sort of, you start to get a pretty good matrix of challenges that, when you combine them together, you know, it makes a unique experience every time. And then add into that the game comes with a level editor. I've done a lot of work lately on making that a little more accessible, and I'm really excited about the possibility of having like an online repository for the PC version of the game where people can share their levels
Have you seen what they did with Super Meat Boy, actually?
Oh, with the internets?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that was pretty genius.
Super cool. Yeah, I think that's awesome. It's actually, you know, I think we mentioned earlier before the podcast that the level data is all stored entirely inside of the images of the levels themselves. So at least for the PC version of the game, I'll have a web page that you'll be able to upload your levels to just by uploading the image of the level. And then that you'll be able, you know, people will be able to rate levels, and, you know, hopefully I can have like a featured level type of thing, you know, just have a nice web page for sharing levels with each other. And then people can even write their own stories with them as well.
That's great.
So yeah, I'm really super excited about that aspect.
So is Monica your full-time job now?
Oh, yeah. I've been full-time indie for about 6 years.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The previous games I worked on were ecosystem sim games. And then before that, I was actually in the console, PC console AAA space. I worked on a couple of Medal of Honor games and that horrible GoldenEye remake that EA made. That was the last game I worked on before I said fuck it and went indie.
Yeah, I was gonna say that would drive anyone away.
I worked on a game called Whacked, which was the first online console game. It was for the original Xbox.
Is that the one with the weird rabbit?
Yeah. I had the weird rabbit. Uh-huh. The rabbit who's like the mean Irish rabbit who was angry because all his limbs had been cut off to make Lucky Rabbit's feet.
That's right.
there's a lot of
playing that very briefly and being it left an impression because that's at least 6-7 years old at this point.
Came out in 2002, I think. 2003. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did the AI for that, and I wrote a bunch of the online, like the matchmaking code. for it. So it's this afternoon I was actually working on LAN code for Monaco, and one of the people on the Facebook page asked me how I'd learned to do this stuff, and it's, you know, luckily networking is actually one of the things that I actually have professional experience with, so it's something that has been going fairly smoothly for me.
Yeah.
I'm super excited also about the online stuff, because I'm when you're playing around the same screen, you can't go to different floors, and so you can't really have that much of a competitive experience in Monaco if you're playing on the same screen. But I'm really looking forward to having a good, solid competitive mode in online, because anyone can go to any floor, which means you can basically play every thief for themselves and see who can get in and out with the most stuff without dying. So I'm really excited to see how that plays.
That seems like it's an even better fit for the game than the co-op that exists already. Is it, you know, a band of thieves? Someone's always going to betray them. I mean, we all watch movies.
So. Well, it's the Kane and Lynch Fragile Alliance mode, basically. That's what they do with their multiplayer mode.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so that's, you know, it's their bank heist and stuff, and it's co-op, but at any time someone can turn in on it and steal from the group, so.
Right.
But yeah, it's a core tenet to that genre, I feel.
Yeah.
For sure, yeah, that there's always someone who's going to turn on the team. One of the ideas I've just been sort of kicking around in my head, I haven't had a really solid thought on it yet, but have the ability, and basically give anyone the ability to rat out their teammates at any point, and stick it on the Y button, or, you know, stick it on some one of the controller's buttons, and have it be silent. Like, you don't know who did it. unless you're like, you know, unless you're around to see who the guards actually shoot at, you know? I think that would be a lot of fun.
So are you big into co-op gaming? I remember we had a guy at PAX actually who did a little video interview with you, and you had said that this idea came up about 8 years ago, which at that time co-op gaming wasn't as big as it is now. It wasn't, you know, the bullet point that everybody wanted on their box. Was it a co-op themed game back then, or did you have that competitive mode in mind right from the get-go, or?
Yeah, no, it actually was a co-op game back then. I was really enamored by the original Halo co-op. And I think everyone thought that Halo co-op was awesome, but at the time, at least what I remember from a game development perspective, it really felt like the sort of feature that you could never sell a game based on co-op. It was only ever going to be something that you added on to a regular old single player or experience. But it was so much freaking fun. The original design of the game actually there were really just a few single player like training missions, and most of the missions actually took place. Every thief that was playing the game actually had their own mansion. And you would, the stuff that you would steal when you went on missions, you would put into your mansion. But the missions that you would go on, you would go into other thieves' mansions and go steal their stuff. So it was you'd build up your security systems, and then you'd go steal stuff, and then you try and basically make money on that in order to build your mansion bigger and collect sets of stuff and stuff like that. And it's actually, I think, still a really great idea and would work really well in the context of Monaco, but it's probably sort of a round two type of thing.
Could be like an MMO kind of style. Everyone has their mansion and goes to everyone else's mansion to try and steal.
Yeah, that's basically what it was. It's like City of Thieves, you know?
Yeah.
and the original version of the game, the actual sort of basic gameplay was remarkably similar to what it ended up as, but it was a little bit more RPG-ish. So rather than choosing a character that has has one passive ability, one active ability, you would have a character in which you'd increase the stats in all of the different passive abilities, and then you would choose which equipment you wanted to bring, and that would determine your active ability on each heist. So over time, but then also as you're building up your security in your mansion, you can spend more money to basically make the locks take longer to open. Where so you'd have to be a stronger locksmith in order to get through it, because that the you know, your locksmithing skill determines how fast you would actually get through the lock.
See, I'm envisioning this as a very epic PlayStation Home hack right now.
Yeah, actually, that would the original version of the game was also 3D, so it actually wouldn't have been that far from that, I imagine. Yeah, and some other cool things too, like you know, the original idea was that there was a closed ecosystem or a closed economy of items in the world, and anytime. You know, as the player base grew, you would introduce new items, like the museum is having a new, you know, having a Degas exhibit or something. And so you know, a bunch of Degas paintings go into the museum. And then on that museum level, you know, those paintings are stolen and, you know, end up, you know, in thieves' houses, basically. And then they end up, that's how they end up back into the world. And then you'd collect sets of stuff in order to increase their value. Like if you had, you know, all three Degas paintings, then it would increase their value. But only so then you try and protect those particularly well, whereas you might leave your Rembrandts a little more vulnerable or something along those lines, which seems like a bad idea. But yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff in that original version of the game. I'd still, at some point, you know, love to do some of that stuff.
Yeah. You know, one thing I thought, one thing I thought would be pretty interesting would be kind of like a hardcore mode where each class is the only class that could do what it can do. So, for instance, like the locksmith is the only person that can actually unlock the doors or hack the safe. Yeah. Right? Wow. The hacker's the only person that can get in the computer system and, you know, see the security cameras and stuff like that. So, like, the players had to work together to complete the heist.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea, actually. I'm even going to write that down.
Just put my name in the credits.
yeah, that's actually a really good idea. You know, it could be that the level design in the end won't actually support that, you know, because you'd have to go into the mission with a locksmith if you did that. You
wouldn't
complete the game without a locksmith. Yes, I think that's a really interesting idea.
or perhaps even a level that, you know, depending, you play like single player and it's like a puzzle mode or something where you have to use your abilities to get through the level in a way that's unique to that character.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, so. I suspect that by the time I'm done, there's going to be some levels that are pretty damn hardcore without that.
Well, and especially if you unleash this to the community to create stuff, they're going to be creating some, you know, things you never even imagined.
Oh yeah, massively hardcore stuff.
Oh man, look at Minecraft.
Yeah. Yeah.
No kidding. Yeah, and I mean the game can get incredibly difficult just by adding one or two extra guards and a bunch of security cameras and, you know, motion detectors and dogs and stuff like that. So. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's plenty of room to get harder.
I got to say, I really like the style of it right now. You had said that originally it was 3D, but I like the whole 2D kind of looks like a map kind of a thing, and the colors and stuff are, you know, there's good contrast and everything.
Cool.
I think it really works.
The original visual inspiration, you know, the UI and stuff, I'd actually sort of designed the graphic design aspect of it. Back in that original design 8 years ago, but again, the game was 3D, so you know, you can only have so much of that graphic design to actually carry through into the world. But I ended up sort of retaining that graphic design look and actually making the gameplay out of it as well. And it's something that I'm still trying to push as much as I can. But it's really good to hear you say you liked it. A lot of that stuff, actually, if there's a con man movie or a heist movie called Confidence with Edward Burns and Rachel Weisz.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I personally think that it was a pretty underrated film. I really liked it. But if you look at like the movie posters for for confidence. So if you look, if you like Google,
color stripes for all the characters, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And so a lot of that, the inspiration, sort of the original graphic inspiration, came from some of the posters for that movie. And then if you actually, when you watch the movie, they actually carry a lot of that, sort of dark spaces with bright colored lighting. They bring a lot of that through into the movie itself, and so I try to sort of take that as inspiration.
So you've done all the graphics and everything yourself as well?
Yeah. I've done everything. The music is not mine. That's from a composer that just released a bunch of stuff for free on the internet. And then the sound effects I've collected from a variety of places and put it all together. And the art's all mine, and the code is mine too. So
it's excellent.
Very cool.
And I can't reiterate enough that, you know, it felt really intuitive to us. You know, we didn't really have to puzzle anything out. We can just picked a character and went.
Well, that's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah, it's simple. I think it's simple enough that anybody can pick it up and play, you know, right. And, you know, if they have some degree of game literacy, and hard enough that you want to put a fist through the monitor when you screw up or your co-op partner runs off and attracts five guards and you have to go stay.
I think it'll even be like a great party game because the concept of it is so simple that, you know, anybody, even like kind of non-gamers, would get it.
Right.
So, you know, you can have a bunch of people around the TV kind of playing it and pass the controller.
My hope is that the game, the difficulty of the game, it really sort of scales on how much challenge you want to put on yourself. Because if you're just trying to get in and get the item you're trying to steal and get back out alive, it's a less difficult game. Whereas if you're trying to get in and out with all the loot, it gets a lot harder. And then, you know, to get like a platinum medal on a level, you have to get 100% of the loot and get out without getting shot once. And that's typically how I play the game these days. And that's, you know, still a challenge for me. It's really fun playing that way. So, especially if you play with a group. When you're playing that way, I think it's just as fun with a group or without a group. It definitely tends to make the gameplay a lot more carefully when you're trying to do the whole thing without getting shot.
So you said, you know, there's definitely going to be a PC release, and then everything else is kind of up in the air.
Yeah. So originally, when I talked to the console company, so the game won the IGF after only 15 weeks of work. It was, kind of a big surprise to me to be nominated, and then, you know, a huge excitement and honor to actually win. I went and pitched the game to the console companies right after that happened. But the game back then had really rudimentary graphics. It was still, it still had some rough edges, quite a few rough edges. And, you know, the general response I was getting was, well, this is really fun, but we just don't get it. I was hearing that from a lot of the suits, basically.
How could you claim that something's fun and that you can't get it? You'd have to get it to know it was fun.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's when you talk to any of these companies, with all due respect to them, you're not talking to one person. You are talking to one person, but you're also talking to a group at the same time.
You're talking to his boss and his boss's boss and
yeah, all that. Exactly. Yeah. And so there's a lot of sort of encounter a lot. And this, I don't want to say specifically, you know, that any one particular group was doing this or one wasn't. But you do encounter a lot of like good cop, bad cop. Where the person you're talking to is basically saying, you know, it's really great, but, you know, so-and-so doesn't get it. Can you work on this or something? Our business doesn't, you know, marketing department doesn't get it or something along those lines. And it's just, you know, I don't want to say anyone's being dishonest, but it's something where you're not dealing with an individual. You're dealing with a representative for a group. And so you kind of have to read between the lines with a lot of the stuff they say.
Definitely. You said you won the IGF with this. I was wondering how you feel about the state of the indie community right now.
Oh, couldn't be stronger, man. There's just so many huge successes this year between Minecraft and Super Meat Boy just came out, and it looks like it's selling really well. Like all of the Humble Bundle stuff that Wolfire put on, the Overgrowth guys. You know, a lot of the classics are still selling really well, like World of Goo and Braid, and Castle Crashers are all selling really well. Those are sort of the crown jewels of the indie gaming scene. The IGF just received 391 entries, up from 301 last year, so almost 100 more than last year, and that's not even including the student competition, which quite often is actually produces the most interesting games of the whole competition. It couldn't be stronger, and it's incredibly fun to watch. I mean, not only are the indies right now producing some of the most innovative games we've ever seen, but they're also producing some of the most fun games we've ever seen, you know? And so it's almost like, you know, I feel like maybe it's just because I'm really into indie games and I'm, you know, I'm part of the scene and all of that stuff, but I honestly feel like 75% of the reason to play games is coming out of the indie scene right now.
Yeah, I was actually going to say that. I feel like a lot of the what I would call a gamer's game, a lot of those tend to come out of the indie scene. Like right now, like people who love games for the love of games, like Super Meat Boy is a really, like, anybody who grew up on platformers is going to absolutely love and hate that game, but love to hate it, and eventually just see, you know, just play it because it's pure mechanics and it's cool and it has all those cameos. But, you know, one of my favorite games from the past few years was actually Aquaria, and, you know, that was another big indie game, and I absolutely loved it. And I really like seeing successful indie games because, you know, as good as those games are, it will, you know, the right people take notice of what works and can introduce, you could say they're stealing ideas from the indie scene, but, you know, it makes all the games better when people are coming up with new and unique things.
Yeah, and you can say that from a game design perspective as well as a business perspective, too. The rise of Steam wouldn't have happened without, you know, Steam happened because the casual game industry basically introduced digital distribution to gaming. And that, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago, or actually 6 years ago now. And the casual game industry, as of, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, was the indie scene. The indie scene was making casual games and selling their games online because they couldn't go through the typical channels. And so that built up the whole concept of selling digitally. And then Steam came along when they started selling the casual games is actually when they sort of really took off. And I'm not going to say that Steam is successful because of casual games. It's not. It's successful because of the other games they're selling. At the same time, that was sort of a turning point for them, I think, and the point at which their service actually became really the primary PC distribution platform rather than the retail chains. You can really look to indies for a lot of the changes that we've seen in the game industry in the last 5-6 years.
Definitely. I'm very glad to see that it's taken off, and it's nice that, you know, things like XNA exist that kind of ease the barrier of entry for people that don't want to, you know, like, go out and learn Blitz Basic or something, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, Monaco is in XNA. I don't know that I would have built it in XNA had I known that I was actually going to be making this game. Because when I originally started on the game, I was intending just to take, you know, a couple of weeks break from this other game, from the big game I was working on. But after a week, it was already so much fun that I just kind of kept going on it. I originally intended to spend 2 weeks, and then that turned into 4 weeks, and that turned into 6 weeks, and that turned into 15 weeks, and that turned into a year. And so it's just a little over a year now for me. The problem with XNA, it's great to be able to sell on Xbox Live indie games, but one of the problems that you have is that the pricing model on XBLIG and the PC is totally different. So it's tough to really sell the same game both on the PC and on the Xbox. And if you intend to use XNA to sell on the PC, you have a problem because you can't sell on a Mac, which is these days a huge percentage of the gaming market. Macs, the actual market share that Macs have over PCs is, I think it's still only like 12% or something like that. But
it's a growing segment.
Well, and the market share of people that actually buy games, because the people that, in terms of the number of gamers, there's plenty more on the PC, but a huge portion of those are pirating their games, whereas that's not true on the Mac. If you talk to indie game developers, you'll actually find that Mac sales will be anywhere from 70% to 100% of what the PC actual sales market of games in terms of selling indie games. So it's a really important market to go after, and so XNA in that way kind of falls down.
Right, and I wasn't intending to say that XNA is the end-all be-all, but it's a good opportunity for someone who wants to step in and learn, or maybe, you know, test the waters of independent game development.
Sure.
It's a great place to get started.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I the reason I did work in XNA is that I wanted to put the game quickly on a console. I'd never worked in it before. I never worked in C#, and the reason I used it is that, you know, it was an easy way to just get started with a language I hadn't used before and put it on the console. There's huge benefits to XNA, no question.
Yeah. Well.
We
waxed poetic there for a few.
No problem.
That's okay. I think that's all the questions we really had for you. I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to add or talk about, if you have a time frame maybe of, you know, when you're looking to wrap things up with it, you know, sometime, I'm guessing it's sometime next year.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's really hard to imagine it would stretch past 2011. I'd shoot myself if it did. it certainly won't be 2010 at this point. If people want to follow development, they should check out the Facebook or the Twitter pages, which I link to from the webpage, which is monacoismine.com. So MONACO ismine.com. And that'll link you to the Twitter and Facebook. I also do like video logs and video blogging on there. I try and keep pretty active on my interaction with the community and try and push a lot of details of development out through the fans. So if people want to come take a look, that'd be great.
Yep. Like I said, I follow that stuff, and that's how I found out about your steganography stuff with the images. It's good stuff.
Cool. Well, thanks for talking to me, and thanks for playing the game at PAX.
Yeah. And I encourage everybody to follow this game because it is really, really fun.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Andy.
Yep. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye.